choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I am alone in the studio today, doing some reflection about this program and what we have accomplished or not over the past almost 20 years that this show has been on the air. It was developed initially to bring information to the disability community and to citizens who have no real connection to disability issues to help them understand the state of services here in Illinois and a better sense of emerging practices that could improve the lives of people with disabilities in Illinois. I've gotten several calls from people who have said, you know, I never realized that there were issues for people with disabilities until I listen to your program. So in that regard, I feel pretty good about the 20 years that have been spent here doing this weekly program that's moved around in different places on the schedule. But after 20 years, I would have hoped for bigger changes. Nothing seems to change in Illinois without lawsuits. You may remember discussions about the Liggett's consent decree, which was settled about 10 years ago now, I'm thinking. And that provided it was a class action lawsuit that found that the state was guilty of not allowing people who lived in the group homes or in intermediate care facilities, which is another type of institutional setting, to move out without losing all their funding. And that was resolved. People were then able to leave those intermediate care facilities and go to group homes or apartments or however their family wanted to help them do that. And as also a part of that, people in the community who were not funded, people with disabilities who had no funding at all, they were instructed by the court to start funding them with an option to go to a group home or to have home-based support services. And that did happen. The state is still under that ruling, and they keep trying to back out of it, but it's not happening for them. So anyway, the point is that it's a lawsuit that made that change, and to do things hoping that it's going to happen, just hasn't worked out very well. So today, without a guest, I'm going to spend some time talking about the concepts and the origin of this program. And if you listen frequently, or even if you just listened only once in the show introduction for Disability Beat, I mentioned several concepts important to people with disabilities. Social justice is mentioned first, but today I'm going to save that one for last if I get to it. The ones that we talk about are social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom and choice. And freedom and choice are kind of a match set. So we'll talk about, first of all, community supports. And what do I mean when we talk about community supports? Some listeners may think about money when the word support is used. And rightly so. It's commonly attached to money a lot of times. But when you're talking about community supports for a person with a disability, it can be a variety of different things. Supports can be paid, for example. With home-based support services, people can hire an individual that will drive them places, be a job coach, help them do shopping, help them around their house, do personal care kind of things. Or you can, supports can be connections like neighbors, friends, people you know at various clubs and organizations, just like the rest of us know people around town. Those people becoming friends can be those connections that help folks get the supports that they need to participate in their world. They also can be supports can be technology that helps a person function more independently than they could otherwise. And this kind of support has been a real help for people with that just need reminders and different kind of technology help that's out there. And we've had people on the program before talking about that kind of technology that's available, from, you know, different apps on an iPad all the way up to specialized equipment that does a task for a person. So supports can be so many different things, and it's also very individualized based upon who the person is and what their needs are. My daughter, who has a disability, has many gifts. And some of the supports that she has received over the years, she uses home-based support services. So she has a couple of people who work for her and provide transportation. That's mainly the way we use that support for her. So the transportation is used to take her to the gym 3 days a week, and when she was working, to take her to work. She has a choir that she goes to on Monday night, and she has somebody drive her to choir. It's, you know, the driving is the main part. And then the other part of what the person does is to provide a little bit of support for her as she lives in her own apartment, and making sure that she understands that she needs to, you know, get her dishes done and unload the dishwasher when it's done, and clean expired food out of the refrigerator, and do her laundry. I mean, just basic living skills like that. So support is a wide variety of stuff that can happen for a person. So the next word that we use is the word inclusion. Now, inclusion has been kind of a trigger word for a lot of people, especially in education, because inclusion right now, and even for the past 20 years or so, has been interpreted as meaning that people with disabilities, they are located in a regular education classroom in the school, but are not able to do what everybody else does. And so there have been great numbers of complaints and battles about who should be in school and who should not. And that's really why special education was created, you know, eons ago, is that we had to be able to do something with people who couldn't do the same things that the regular students could do. But to me, inclusion means that people with disabilities have the same opportunity to participate in the world as anyone else. There are no prerequisites or requirements in my definition. For me, that started when Annie was a baby. I was very set. One thing that really helped me when she became a part of my life many years ago is that we were living in Cincinnati at the time, and they had a very active Down Syndrome Association, because Annie was born with Down syndrome and I knew nothing about it whatsoever. I went to the first, you know, I called somebody from the group, and somebody came to visit and oohed and aahed over Annie, and she was a very cute baby. But they talked about the fact that how important parent support is. So I guess where I'm going with this is, if you know somebody who has a family member with a disability, encourage them to connect with other people, because other people who have experienced the same thing that you are can be a huge resource and make life a whole lot better and connect you to different people and other resources. So one thing that they connected me to right away when we started belonging to this parent support group is they said, you know, a lot of service providers have play groups for kids with disabilities, but we encourage our families to join a neighborhood play group where there are typically developing kids. And we actually did both for a while. Annie was in a kind of a therapy group with several other kids that had disabilities, and it was great getting to know those parents. But we also belong to a neighborhood play group. And so there were all the other children in that group were typically developing. Annie was about two, as were all the other kids. And of course, typical two-year-olds are walking, and Annie was not walking at that time. She was able to crawl, but she couldn't walk yet because with Down syndrome, development of physical traits can be very slow sometimes, and that had not yet emerged. But I did notice that when she was in that play group, she tried so hard to do the things that the other kids were doing. And really, she modeled her behavior after the other kids. And I thought, you know, she really works at it when she's with typical kids, where she didn't so much when she was in that therapy group. So that was a revelation to me. And I thought at that point, you know, I need to have her in a situation with typical kids as much as I can. And so that's when we started really looking at school inclusion for Annie. And it was a big deal because it was not something that was typically done in school districts anywhere. This is back in the late 80s when she was only, a 5-year-old. And she went to a special preschool program that was pretty inclusive because it was a Head Start program. So there were kids with disabilities in there, and there were kids who may be at risk of having a disability because of their family situation. But Annie did really well in that preschool program, and it was in the regular neighborhood school where she would attend kindergarten. This was actually in Connecticut, where we lived at the time. And at the end of the school year, the principal approached me and said, you know, I think Annie would do really, really well in a kindergarten program here at our school. Would you permit that? And I said, absolutely, I would, but we're moving to Illinois. So could you write that in her individualized education plan so that I can take that around to different school districts in Illinois and see if we can replicate that kindergarten placement somewhere else? And they willingly did that, and we ended up coming to Illinois after calling to several school districts in the area where we were going to be moving, and ended up moving to a community that some of you may be familiar with in Mahomet, and called the superintendent and set up what they call a staffing. So that's an initial meeting where the family gets together with the school staff, and you talk about, you know, how is this going to work exactly? Well, right before that meeting happened, the superintendent at the time called me back and said, you know, you're going to have to take her for an assessment because I think it's probably better if she go to the early childhood preschool program before she starts kindergarten. And so we went to the program, and I went to get her assessed, and I said to every one of the therapists that tested her that, you know, we really want her to be in regular kindergarten. This is what has been recommended for her. We've just moved from Connecticut, and we don't want her to have to go through any more transitions. So when we got to the staffing, it was a room full of adults and us with our three children, and Annie was the oldest of the three. And so they went around the room and they talked about how, you know, they tested her at this level for this particular skill, and they recommended placement at the early childhood program. And the next person said the same thing, and they went around the room, and about an hour later, finally got to us, and they said, so what do you think, parents, what do you think about this idea of the early childhood program. And I said, well, it's no secret to any of you that I believe Annie belongs in kindergarten. And they said, but we've never done that before. We don't really know how that would work. And I said, well, you know what? She's my oldest child. I've never had a kid with Down syndrome before. She's my only one. And so I know that it's not going to be simple necessarily, but I'm willing to help. I'm willing to do what I can to make it happen. And making a very long story quite short, they said, okay, we'll give it a try. And it changed from year to year. But after that first year in kindergarten, they said, you know, she's actually reading. They didn't expect that. She was counting. They didn't expect that. She was doing a lot of the same things that the typically developing kids were doing. And so, you know, when it came to going to first grade, we had, as we always do, parents, if you're listening, you know that the IEP meeting, the individual education plan, comes at the end of the school year every year. And you have to set goals for the next year and talk about placement and all those kinds of things. Well, they went through all the different test scores and that information that, you know, what she can do, what she can't do, that kind of stuff. And then we talked about first grade, and the special ed teacher, who now is a good friend, leaned over to me and she said, you know, Annie finished reading at the level expected for a kindergartner. She has enough language and reading skill that she could start reading in first grade on grade level. And if you had put her in special ed, that probably wouldn't have happened. And so that really convinced me from that point forward that she did belong in regular education. She was learning from being around other kids. And it didn't always play out that she stayed on level. She did divert from the norm in many ways. She is definitely not a math person, but neither am I. But she was able to compensate along the way. So when she started having difficulty with, you know, figuring out math problems, for us it wasn't important that she knew how to do the problem in her head, to solve problems in her head, but rather give her the tools to make her self-sufficient enough that she can solve problems. And so the simple solution for her was giving her a calculator and learning to use a calculator, which is a really important skill. I don't know many people who don't use calculators anymore for just basic stuff. So it was not only a good thing for Annie and allowed her to stay in a regular math class, but it was also kind of fun to watch the other kids kind of checking in with Annie to see if, you know, what did she get for question number 10? Because theirs didn't match. And so, you know, it was always a really good relationship builder for her. She also belonged to different organizations in the community that are not related to disability. She was a member of a Girl Scout troop for a number of years, and they went on trips and they went camping and they did all kinds of fun activities. And whenever they did a program, they had Annie as the person, the hostess, narrating the production. And she really enjoyed that. She also played various sports, t-ball and softball and basketball, and those things all occurred in typical fashion, not special sports for people with disabilities. One story when she was in junior high school really sticks out to me as being so important in the whole way that Annie developed over the years, and that was that when she was in her eighth grade language arts class, the teacher was great at making accommodations for her, and we had a great relationship, and Annie loved her. But she called me up one day and said, you know, Annie is doing well in class, but we are going to be doing a unit on Shakespeare. We're going to be reading the story, reading the play Hamlet in class. And I just think it's going to be over her head. It's going to be too hard. Maybe we should find, you know, she could work in the office or go to the special ed room or do something different during that unit. And I said, well, you know, let's talk about it first. Let's say, you know, tell me exactly what is entailed in this unit. She said, well, we're going to read the play in class. We're going to choose parts and people will, you know, read the play. And I said, well, Annie could, if you gave me a small part, she could practice it at home and read it, and that wouldn't be a problem. She goes, yeah, that's fine. I think that would work. And then she said, we're going to build some props, and we're going to act out parts of the play in class. And then at the end of the play, there's a production of Hamlet at the university. There's a student production. We're going to go see that. And so I said to the teacher, well, why don't we just let her stay and see what happens? If you think after a few days that she's really frustrated and she doesn't want, you know, that she shouldn't be there, then we can talk again. But I think she'll really enjoy it because she'll be able to be a part of what's going on in the class. And so the teacher was very willing to do that. And about 3 days later, Annie came home with an assignment to talk about. She had to write 3 sentences about what happened in the first scene of Hamlet. Now, I know that everybody else's assignment was much bigger than that. They probably had to write a whole page of something, but the teacher was making an accommodation for her and asking her just to write 3 sentences. One thing you may not know if you're not a parent of a person with a disability, that if they are in school and they have homework, you have homework. You have to be able to ask the questions, have enough knowledge about the topic to ask questions to get the answers so that they can write their answers down on the page. So anyway, I hate Shakespeare and I had never read Hamlet. And so I was making dinner and I was busy and I just said, hey, Annie, what was the first scene of Hamlet about? And usually I get a big sigh and no answer, but this time she gave me a big sigh and then she said, Hamlet was a king. He died. And then he turned into a ghost. And I said, write those sentences down, which she did. She went to school the next day and the teacher called me up right after class and said, that was great. She can stay. She understands what's going on in the play. She may not understand all the terminology and all this stuff, but she's really having a good time with this. And to this day, Annie loves Shakespeare. Don't ask me why, but she does. And so it's just one example of something that she would not have known about or benefited from had she been in a special education classroom. You do not learn about Shakespeare necessarily in a self-contained special education classroom. So, yeah, I'm not going to get through nearly any of this today. We're going to have to do another session. If you want to hear more about Annie, hang on, because I'll be back in a minute with a little bit more.
I'm just a pilgrim on this road, boys. I'm just a pilgrim on this road, boys. I'm just a pilgrim. Sometimes
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat, and I'm Vicki. I'm going down our list on why is this program even a part of community radio. We talked about inclusion. We talked about community supports. And now let's talk a bit about accessibility, because that's one of the things that's really, really important for folks with disabilities, not only in this community, but everywhere. And typically when we're talking about accessibility, we're talking about physical accessibility, meaning, you know, ramps to a doorway, wider doorways so that wheelchairs can get through them, wheelchair accessibility, bathrooms where wheelchairs can move around so that people can actually use the bathroom well. So, you know, physical accessibility is certainly a big, big concern. And since the ADA was passed back in 1990, years ago, that has become less and less of a problem. But when you have historic buildings in the community, and we have lots of those in the Champaign-Urbana area, it takes a while for those changes to be made. But real accessibility goes a lot deeper than that. It's bigger than just physical accessibility. This goes back to the idea of prerequisites, that people must have the necessary skills to participate, like when she was in school. That, you know, there were a lot of teachers who would say, well, yeah, third grade may have worked out well, but fourth grade's a lot harder. So, you know, we have to, you know, work hard to make sure that she has ways to participate in that. And, you know, we talked enough about school, but I just want to give one more example of an accessibility issue. And that was after Annie graduated from high school, which she did. She graduated from her class and spent a couple of years in an adult education class for, you know, learning life skills and works, had a job and, you know, those kinds of things. She also wanted to take a community college class. She was interested in taking a child development class. And so we applied for that. And the idea was that she would audit the class. But it was, the college was resistant to that idea. They said, well, she will have to pass a reading assessment test with a 60% to be able to take, to be able to audit this class. Well, she took the test and she got a 50%, a little bit short, but they did not allow it to happen. So that's just one of those, that's a requirement that is out there. And I know it's based upon the idea that we want our students to be able to achieve, but for somebody with a disability, this was an interest of hers. It was an audit situation, so she would not receive a grade. She would not get credit for taking this class, but she could be there to learn. And she would have learned, and maybe not everything that everybody else was learning, but she would have learned things that were important to her. So that's the kind of accessibility that is really, really important for her. Then we talk about freedom and choice. And I, you know what, I think I'm going to have to save some of this for another program, because I've got a lot more to talk about. And maybe I can get somebody else to come in and talk about the same things as well. But it's been a pleasure kind of unloading all my opinions on you. I never really do that. So it is, it's nice to be heard. And if you have any input, if you have experiences that you'd like to share, please go to my Facebook page at Disability Beat on Facebook. And you can come and tell your story. I'd love to have you on the program if you have something that to say that would be beneficial and help other people learn about different situations and different people and how they can be successful in the world, even when they have a disability. So again, that's Facebook. The program is called Disability Beat. I hope that you are a regular listener. If you're not, I hope that you will be. I hope we can all learn together. Thanks for tuning in today. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.